What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Microcast. Today's episode is hosted by me, TJ David, and Zoe Rome. This is our new podcast. We got some great feedback on our first episode, which aired last Friday, and that was all about mindset from racing in Argentina. We talked a bit about Zoe's new book, Becoming a Sustainable Runner, and some fun pop culture stuff too. If you haven't listened, check that out.
Yeah, we got a lot of positive feedback on the first episode, so we're excited to keep exploring this new format. And here's what we're talking about this week, a challenge that we worked through this week, something outside of running that we're thinking about a lot, and how to balance community and relationships with seriously training and running. We'll also dive into some quick hot or not rounds at the end, and that'll be really fun. So be sure to listen all the way through to soak up all this juicy goodness.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks,
Zoe. I think of it as like a French dip of a podcast, right? Like you get all this good meaty sandwich and just want to soak up all the good humor broth at the end.
Totally. It sounds wonderful. All right, let's get right in.
So first we have our Chumbawamba moment. Yeah, I wanted to kick off this section because I was literally listening to the song Tub Thumping on my run today. It's a new part of my running playlist, and I was getting jiggy with it on the trail, and I actually literally fell fully Superman down the trail while listening to the song, which is about getting knocked down and getting back up again. So really explored that topic in a visceral way out on my run today.
Wow. So you actually took a big spill and then had to get yourself back up.
I got knocked down and I got back up again.
It's a little scary on race week to take a fall.
I know. And it's like, I always fall on the stupidest, flattest sections of trail. I was running on like perfectly flat, pristine single track on Prince Creek, this little trail called Porcupine Rim. And there's like one rock on the whole trail and my toe found it. And I just went soaring, but I would rather fall during taper week than on the race. And I think it's just like always good. Like having falls where you don't get hurt are always really good to remind you like falling is normal. Falling is part of the process. It's not a catastrophe. It's not something that we need to fear and build up in our brains.
Yeah, 100%. Actually, I think if you're taking a good fall every now and again, it's a sign that you are trying hard and working on your downhill running usually.
Yeah, and fully embracing the Chumbawamba lifestyle. So TJ, yeah. What was your moment where you got knocked down but got back up again this week?
Great question. I had like an epiphany around protein intake this over like the past like 4 or 5 days. I was listening to a podcast with a researcher who it's his whole deal to research protein and the impacts and takeaways for endurance athletes, for athletes of all different types.
And you know, when I call myself an Oreo researcher, no one takes me seriously, even though I have been working on nailing my Oreo intake for years and years. Where is my podcast?
Well, the Oreo is one of the best vegan snacks around. I'm not sure how much protein is in there, but it could be pretty nice on a long run.
Yeah.
Anyways, my Chumbawamba moment was really realizing that I was not getting in nearly enough protein. I've kind of been, I got to admit, like I'm not all about counting calories or grams or, you know, like adding any particular like data points to the way I eat. I've tended to be pretty intuitive about how I've, you know, been eating, and I've actually been trying to loosen my grip around the foods that I eat, because I do feel like sometimes being a vegan, it can be pretty restrictive, especially for an athlete. But kind of getting some of the science and hearing from an expert about it. And, you know, I feel like my coach tells me to eat protein and, you know, gives me a number and I'm like, okay, I'm sure I'm around that and it's probably fine. And something just like, I'm like, well, I'm building up to Leadville. Really want to be able to do a bit more volume. I want to respect, I had an inside tracker test recently and the numbers were okay. They weren't like amazing. They weren't as good as, you know, my last test. So I kind of wanted to respect that maybe there's some new habits that I need to form around my fueling. and eating. And so, you know, part of that, I happened to listen to this podcast and get some information. I was like, okay, let me investigate how much protein I'm eating in a day. I'm like, you know, if the golden rule, you know, according to this expert was 1 gram per pound of body weight, I was like, well, I'm definitely going to be under that. And so like when I calculated, I was like, well, I was way under. And so I've spent maybe the last 5 days really focusing on getting in at least 100 grams of protein a day minimum, and then starting to try to push up towards 1 gram per body weight, which is really, really hard. Just like super full.
I think this is something that we've struggled with as a household, which, like, just to normalize, a lot of athletes struggle with this. Actually, whenever someone tells me, oh yeah, I'm definitely getting enough protein, that's like how I know that they absolutely aren't and that they haven't been taking it very seriously, because hitting those numbers without a lot of intentionality and strategy is really, really difficult. You know, two things I don't love are self-reflection and math, and hitting your macros involves both of those. And I really realized when I started tracking my protein intake too, that I was in the range of like 30 to 40% of my daily protein needs. And when I really started being intentional, and like for me, that was 2 protein shakes a day, which is like maybe not the most fun, sexy strategy ever, but was really the only way I was able to, like, especially when traveling and still eating a vegetarian diet, get in that protein. And something that I just wanted to share, like a fun little test I've been doing for work, is with a protein company called Elo, and they do this really cool thing where they custom — I'm not sponsored, I have no, like, zero dog in this fight, it's just like I've been testing it for work, and you can get your blend customized. So I got mine so that it has 30 grams of protein in a serving, so that between 2 servings, I can get about 60 grams a day. And then I mix that in with almond milk that's fortified with additional protein, which is a great tip I got from Team RDN Kylie Van Horn, who can be a really helpful ally for athletes who are looking to up their protein intake. And something I really liked about the Elo protein is not only like do you get the like fun custom blend, but they actually send me a text after all of my workouts telling me how many grams of protein I should aim to get in after a certain workout, because it syncs their app with your Apple data. So like if I do a 10-mile run, it'll be like, great job, have 1 scoop of protein. If I do a 20-mile run, it'll be like, honestly, girl, you need like 3 scoops of protein throughout the course of the day. And I think that having that, like, for me, the like super techie, like, I don't necessarily need the super customized sort of aspect of the technology, but I do need that accountability and I do need the reminder. So for athletes that are really struggling, a system like that has some built-in accountability and like tracking based on biometrics could be helpful. Again, this is primarily an endorsement, not for a specific product, but for being specific in how you approach protein intake.
Yeah. And I would go so far as to say, you know, with the athletes that I coach, count your grams of protein.
I think that unless you have a history where counting macros is really not a mentally healthy place for you, which is totally fine and acceptable, and there are other ways to approach this, which I would really recommend working with Kylie, who has experience in helping athletes who are recovering from eating disorders and disordered eating, still eating enough to fuel their activity. It takes a lot of intention and education to bridge this gap and to get the protein you need. I'm curious what specific strategies, TJ, you've been using.
Well, I think, you know, just playing off of the talk around identity and all of that from last week, and how my mindset in racing is so tied into kind of my way of being. Again, you know, the habits that I tend to adopt as an athlete directly correlate and align with that way of being. And I have always found that when I want to build out a habit, it's really important for me to kind of cultivate it to that bigger picture thing, that 30,000 foot view. You know, I have a goal. I'm racing Leadville 100 in about 8 weeks. I have a lot of mileage to do between now and then in training. You know, I consider myself an athlete. An athlete takes care of their body. An athlete eats well in order to recover and stay on the front side of injury and burnout and all of these these pitfalls that exist. So for me, it's like a no brainer. You know, if I know how to get that protein in and I know how much I need, you know, it just ties right into my way of being and something that I'm going to do. So it's like, oh, now I just wake up and I have 20 grams of protein in the morning. And then, you know, I have 40 grams after my first workout and another 40 grams after my second workout and then dinner, and I'm all the way up over 100. And I have to say, like, it is a lot of protein shakes because that's a really easy way to get in protein. And no stigma there. Like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get the protein in. And I've already noticed a difference. You know, I just did about a 90-mile week last week, and then I went right from one rest day into a really big workout, almost 13 miles this morning, and I felt great. That was one of my best workouts in the last few months, and my legs weren't tired or sore or anything like that. And I was like, almost like connected a dot for me. It's like, you know, we don't have quite enough data to be like, is it the protein? But also it's like, well, I feel really good, so I'm going to keep on, you know, I'm going to stay on this path and see, you know, how well it serves me.
Yeah, I definitely found this spring with all the travel, making sure I had easily available protein was really key for being able to sustain higher training, particularly while on the road, traveling for work. Other things that I found really helpful are just reaching for, so like we're non-dairy milk fans, getting the one that has 10 grams of additional protein, boom, super easy. Also, it's delicious and like way creamier and nice. So that's really fun. I really like having edamame on hand as like a quick snack. I'm like a big salty snack fan. So being able to just have like a quick microwavable, high protein snack. That's one of my favorites to reach for. And I used to keep it in my office fridge, and it's just a really quick thing to do in the middle of the workday.
Totally. Awesome. All right, Zoe, I know that your fall wasn't the only Chumbawamba moment you've had over the past couple of days. What are you thinking about right now?
Yeah, I had a very literal Chumbawamba moment, but my more metaphorical Chumbawamba moment was kind of like a bittersweet thing of seeing the community and so much celebration at Broken Arrow in Western States this week. We have a lot of athletes out there. We have a lot of friends out there. We have people that were on my crew last year who are out there. And really experiencing some FOMO, like the FOMO is real on not being in Olympic Valley right now, not tapering for Western States, not doing the heat training, doing all the things I was doing last year to participate in this event that I so wanted to participate in. And it's doubly hard because like, not only do I feel a sense of FOMO as an athlete, I feel like as someone in trail running media, there's so much pressure to do everything and be everywhere. Like, all the incentives in the industry right now are to do the most and to create the most and just constantly be caught up on this treadmill of content creation and comparison that I've had to really intentionally decide to divest from that and to make sure with all the decisions I'm making, viewing my time and energy as a resource, that I'm playing the long game. Because I used to just say yes to every work opportunity that came up to me. I used to say yes to every trip, every opportunity, every phone call I would say yes to without even thinking. And now something that we've been doing in our family, again, is that if you're not an enthusiastic yes, it's a no. And having, you know, kind of my own really robust race schedule this year has helped me prioritize, like, I can't race to my potential and travel to every ultra on the planet. Like, I can't always be zooming around to UTMB races and world champs and Western States and Broken Arrow and like doing all the shakeouts and being super social if I also want to race well and also just like have a life outside of work and running, which I finally do. And it takes, for me, it takes a lot of discipline and commitment to continue to shore up the part of myself that isn't about running. And so this week has been all about like acknowledging like, okay, I'm experiencing FOMO around Broken Arrow in Western States. Like, that's rooted in a really positive thing. Like, there is a part of me that loves community, that wants to be there for my people, that wants to feel a part of something. But also, part of being in a community means sometimes strategically not being all up in that community. And for me, this week is about being really deeply rooted in prioritizing the longevity in my career as both an athlete and a writer, and confidence in that I am on the right path for me and a lot of other places. Like, I have two stand-up shows coming up in the next week that wouldn't be possible if I was out doing all this media stuff. I have awesome opportunities to connect with my friends here in Carbondale. I have great coaching opportunities here, and I have my own racing to attend to. So just being able to acknowledge that I have this feeling and then remind myself that like, this is a normal feeling that you're going to have when you're, when you have a lot going on in a good way. Like, this is good and normal. Sit with it, but we don't need to like act about it. We don't need to spiral out.
Totally. And I think, you know, the whole thing about FOMO is we're feeling like we're lacking something, and
yeah,
you're lacking nothing. And when you zoom out and you really see just the way that you've designed your life and the new elements that you brought into it, the new avenues of, you know, of the new creative pursuits, they all kind of feed who you are and represent who you are and allow you to access who you are. And sometimes we have to prioritize different things. And it's challenging to say no to Western States and not be out there to support our friends and our athletes who are running. And I feel it too, but at the same time, you are supporting them by supporting yourself.
Totally. And like, I truly believe that my path to Western States involves doing exactly what I'm doing this weekend. So like, I am fully pursuing my own journey. So like, there is a way that like, in order to really be there at Western States in the way that I want to be there, I need to not be there this week. And like, the byproduct of like being committed to my own journey means that I get to like do stand-up comedy as well. And I get to race this really cool race in Colorado this weekend. And I get to spend more time at home with TJ and Bowie. And those are all really amazing things to dwell on as well.
I don't think we're dwelling on those. I think we're celebrating.
Dwelling in a positive way. Yeah. Like sitting with, dwelling, like dwell, like be existing in.
That's awesome. That's great, Zoe. I mean, for anyone who knows you, a lot of growth in these realizations and perspective shifts. And I think it's worth acknowledging that.
Yeah. But I know that a lot of our athletes struggle with FOMO. So I'm just here to say it's real. But I think that getting in touch with like, where is this coming from? And how can I use this to get back in touch with like my long-term vision and my like real core values is a really great way to take that sometimes uncomfortable feeling and turn it into a really positive investigation of how things are going. So next, TJ, what are you into this week?
I've been thinking about a lot of things per usual. But I've been, you know, contemplating and thinking about this, yes. And, improv comedy principle. I've kind of been
seeing it.
Yeah.
I'm so
right
excited.
Right up your alley, Zoe. It's something that I think is very,
can you just like back it up? Tell us what yes. And is.
Yes. And is it's this principle used in improv comedy where you kind of present an idea or a thought or a word or a sentence, and then your partner, your collaborators, they have to say yes to it. And then the and is them adding something to it. And like, so, you know, you have an idea, I don't know, like, I love fish tacos. And then that's like the where you start from. And then your partners are like, and I eat them for, you know, breakfast most mornings or something. And then like somebody else jumps on that. That's how I get my protein. And like, you just keep going and going and going, until you, you know, you build this big thing. And I just, as a creator, a business owner, entrepreneur, that whole concept, I think it kind of like just plays a deeper role in my life than I've really realized. And I tend to say, yes, a lot, and not always with intentions or knowing where it's going to take me. But I think in that process, you know, we get to learn so much, or we get new ideas, insights, and opportunities. And so I've just been kind of seeing how, like, when I have intention of showing up that way, where things go.
One of my favorite quotes from Tina Fey of 30 Rock, SNL, improv fame. She was part of Second City. Her quote is, "Say yes and you'll figure it out afterwards." And I feel like that really sums up the yes and mentality. And I think that this can actually be a really, really powerful sort of approach for coaching, particularly because when you break down what yes and means, it means you're agreeing on a base reality. So like, if an athlete says, you know, I feel like I'm getting slower, yes anding that would be like, okay, I acknowledge how you feel. I'm agreeing with you. We're going to live in the same base reality, but we're going to build on it in a positive way with forward inertia and momentum towards a solution. So it means that you're agreeing on a shared challenge, a shared basis, and then you're moving forward. You're not staying there. You're getting out of there together. And I really love that mentality. And I think that yes and can be really, really underrated, because you can't just yes and yourself. It implies the presence of another person who is working in support of you at all times. And I think that that can be a really powerful mantra to rely on as well. This is something I actually think about a lot when it comes to my own running. Like, let's say I'm running a race and my stomach starts to not feel good. My way of yes anding that is to say, like, okay, I'm acknowledging that this is a problem, and we're going to build towards a solution. Like, yes, your stomach hurts, and we're going to get a full cup of ginger ale at the next aid station. So you can acknowledge that something's not awesome, and you can work to find a solution.
Totally. And I think it really is about trying to step back and just be so responsive instead of reactionary, which is what you described. And I think that that's just such an important tool for athletes to develop, but also for people. There's plenty of opportunities throughout the day when you're like, okay, I need to accept this situation. And, you know, what is the response? Or what, you know, maybe it doesn't require a response. What is the avenue that this thing is asking me to come forward and step into? So I don't know, as a creative person, I just really like the idea of like, yes, and, because it's almost like infinite process. You know, there's no destination. It's just a journey, continuing to uncover and uncover and uncover and learn and learn and learn.
Yeah. With your scene partner, right? Like, and I think that, again, like, that's what makes it so, so powerful, is that you're continually bouncing ideas and perspectives off one another in order to get somewhere better or funnier or more exciting, which is a place that can only be reached with another person.
Yeah. And the whole idea of collaboration, right? Like, one of my big things, or one of my values, is community. And in my view, or like the way that I live, like my way of being, is we're all on the same team. And I'm always thinking about, you know, if so-and-so does well, then then that's great for all of us. Or then I'm doing well. And like, oh, when you have something that happens, a trail runner that like is really uplifting, you know, like then the whole house is uplifted. And then, you know, we can pass that on to athletes or friends. And so like when we're all on the same team, we're all collaborating and we're kind of all invested in this greater, ecosystem or community, like microcosm, and we're continuing to make it grow by saying yes and.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you know, that's like, yes and has been such a transformational part of my life in stand up and improv. I think that it's an underrated principle for athletes.
Totally. I mean, you just gave so many great reasons why an athlete could adopt that way of thinking about things, or that perspective, and just how helpful it could be. I like it. So tell me, what are you into this week, Zoe?
So what I'm into this week is the Maintenance Phase podcast. I haven't just been into it this week. It's been one of my favorite podcasts for a couple years now. It's hosted by journalists Aubrey Gordon and Michael Hobbs. And it's all about like the wellness industry, the weight loss industry, the diet industry, and why those spaces are so grifty. And I think that it's really interesting because it helps unpack like why so many folks on the internet and in like the worlds that we find ourselves in a lot, right? Like in the running world, the fitness world, people like we tend to like overlap with folks who are like interested in weight loss and like diet stuff, and like why people in our world are so susceptible to negative and counterfactual information in those spaces. And I like, my theory around this is that because real improvement takes years, it's hard work, it doesn't really fit well into how our brains are programmed to recognize and understand rewards. We want to get better, and we want to get better now. And people start to look for experts who are promising that silver bullet or that like magic pill that's going to make things come fast, free, and easy. In fact, I actually found a study published in 2019 that found that only 1 out of 9 leading quote unquote nutrition bloggers dispensing nutrition advice actually provided accurate and trustworthy information. Like, and this is something we see in the fitness space a lot as well, right? Like, I'm always really careful to indicate that, like, I, like, where my expertise begins and ends. And when people are asking more of me, then I can ethically provide expert information on. And I think that especially with social media and podcasting platforms like this, it really flattens people's ability to suss out who is and isn't an expert. I really like this podcast because it does a good job of unpacking social media grifters and going into why diets don't work. So this is something we see with athletes a lot, is they want to try a keto diet or a low fat diet, or they want to cut out carbs, they want to cut out sugar, they want to cut out processed foods, or they want to be like strict Mediterranean or like whatever is trending on TikTok this week. And these diets don't work because they're not sustainable. And as soon as you get off of them, your body's going to go right back to its metabolic set point if you don't do irreversible damage to your metabolism. And so this podcast goes a lot into explaining the science behind why these diets don't work, why the science around nutrition and diet research is so bad and so complicated. Honestly, it's not just dunking on people. It dives a lot into like why this work is really hard to do and looks like at the nitty gritty of these studies in a way that's really accessible and fun. Something that I really like about this podcast that has both the hosts identify as queer. And I think that our space really privileges people in certain bodies and of certain identities. So often, the only people who are held up as authorities in the fitness space come in a really narrow range of quote-unquote acceptable bodies, and social media exacerbates that. It just feeds us more of what it thinks we want to see, but listening to diet and health advice from someone who's genetically predisposed to look a certain way and has financial resources and incentives that you don't know anything about is a really bad idea. It's been likened to taking financial advice from someone who just happened to win the lottery, you know? So I think that three things that I've learned from this podcast that I always like to think of when I'm assessing something I encounter on the internet and how trustworthy it is and how accurate it is this person a legitimate expert? I look for training, certifications, experience, affiliations with professional organizations that require ongoing education. Judge the advice they give on merit. Does it stand up to scrutiny? If someone has to block a ton of people, and if they just have like if they have certifications that aren't from reputable institutions or aren't validated by third parties, that's something to be really skeptical of. Also, you want to suss out, what does this person have to gain? If a professional athlete endorses a product, that doesn't even mean they use the product. It could simply mean they're paid to use their platform to endorse it. Does this work through an actual mechanism of the body, or is the effect psychological? Investigate the plausibility of any claims made on a certain platform. Does the body actually operate in this way? So I used to work as a professional fact checker, and I really love the fact checking and depth of research done in this podcast. My background in graduate school was in environmental and science communication, and I understand how difficult it is to communicate in a way that's engaging and accurate around science. I work in that space now, and I'm always having to push back against headlines that like skew or overrepresent how big a claim is, right? And I think that I really like this podcast, but it helps kind of ground in a lot of this research. And it does so in a way that's really liberatory and fun. I think that we should all make sure that our media diets are well-rounded. And in the fitness space, we're not all just listening to people who present in a certain gender identity, a certain sexual identity, and a certain body type. And this is a really great way to educate yourself around health and fitness and to just kind of flex your skepticism muscle.
Awesome. Wow. You were thinking about a lot this week.
Yeah. I just love this podcast.
I think we listened to one of those together and I found it really interesting.
Yeah. They just do like a lot of really great debunking, and I laugh all the time when I listen to it. And I think that they just do a really excellent job of providing education and skepticism in a place that has just gotten like really toxic and grifty on the internet lately.
Totally. And in a world where everyone's kind of looking for a magic bullet to help solve, you know, any number of issues. You know, we see that all the time as coaches, you know, what's that one quick workout that's going to get me ready for, you know, the Hard Rock 100? Well, you know, it's not one thing. It's not one supplement. You know, it's going to be hundreds of workouts over hundreds of days and, you know, ideally more. And it's very difficult to, there's a large part of our culture is really focused on all of the things that you just mentioned. And I think it's really important to just take a step back and see what actual value is there in this kind of stuff. And anybody who's kind of touting like these short-term solutions to longer-term and more complex issues, you know, there may be some motives there that are worth thinking about.
Yeah. And so if anyone missed it, that's the Maintenance Phase podcast by Michael Hobbs and Aubrey Gordon. I just felt that it's been a really positive piece of media for me to consume that's helped me question some of my preconceived beliefs about body, fat justice, fat liberation, diet culture. And as someone like in eating disorder recovery, I found it to just be like a gorgeous little safe haven on the internet of people who are really down to, as to borrow a phrase from Fly Nutrition's Emily Tessier, disrupt the waitriarchy.
Nice. I love that. All right, let's get into the meat, the quote unquote, the meat.
The meat. Should we call it the tofu? Would that be too weird?
The tofu of today's conversation, running and
relationships. I just heard a million people sign out of their podcast apps as soon as we started talking about tofu.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. We all get our protein. Yep. I don't judge people's sources of protein.
Yeah. I mean, as long as it's not other people, you're fine.
Yeah, totally.
Community and relationships in running. I think that this is something we've been excited to talk about for a while because it's something that we're always wrestling with ourselves, something that we're always trying to understand and interrogate in our own lives. And it's something that really is baked into what Microcosm is. Like, we don't just call it's not just Microcosm coaching, it's the Microcosm community. So TJ, I'm just really curious why community from the beginning has been such a big part of Microcosm.
Yeah, it's, again, you know, we can just rewind this podcast about 10 minutes. And, you know, I talked about a rising tide lifts all boats. My view is like we're all on the same team. And when you have a team behind you, you know, you're not going through it alone. And for me, that's particularly empowering. You know, I can access higher parts of myself, that I didn't know were there when I know I have the support of others around me. And I feel, you know, when that is really baked into the ethos of a community, I feel like I can go bigger and go for things where if I don't reach my goal or hit my potential and the fall is really long and hard from there, you know, there's not going to be judgment. There's going to be, you know, love and compassion and support and, you know, all of these important ingredients that, you know, we know now via research that help us become more gritty, that help us accomplish more over time. Community, that's what I'm all about. You know, surround yourself with like-minded people, or people who challenge you. You know, all of that I think is just really great. It's a healthy kind of like natural part of who we are. And I just, again, I'll say like, we're in an individual sport. You know, you go out, you run mostly alone, you deal with your own thoughts, all the stuff that comes up when you're out there training. Usually for most people, it's by yourselves. And so, you know, the more we can inject others into that process, I think the better we're able to stay ahead of burnout, injury. We can avoid the pitfalls that exist in the, you know, in the running world. And I think in the end, we really work to change the culture of this sport, which is, you know, largely based on heroic individualism and, you know, the never enough mentality and all of these things that I personally take issue with, and community, you know, stands in opposition of those ways of being.
Yeah, I truly believe that if you are actually engaged in a project of radical self-transformation, it almost always means working to build a better community with which you surround yourself. I wanted to share this quote from Brad Stolberg, who does a lot of really amazing writing about community because of how much it relates to topics that he explores in his work, like groundedness and peak performance. So so much focus on behavior change and performance focuses on the individual. Yet, that's only half the story. Working to build a better self almost always means working to build a better community or tribe with which you surround yourself. This concept holds true whether you are trying to get better at running, painting, writing, making music, parenting, or coaching. It also holds true if you're trying to quit smoking, adhere to a healthier way of eating, or start a new exercise program. It's true if you're a beginner or on the verge of becoming world class. In other words, the people with whom you surround yourself have an enormous impact on your life. In many ways, they shape it. That's from Brad Stolberg. And I think that that is so, so true. And it's borne out in a lot of the evidence that you see and anecdotally. Like, the best runners in the sport, like Eliud Kipchoge, are known to train with groups and to promote groups. And I think that it's also been a big part of our journeys as well, not just in our own running journeys, but as coaches. We really, one of the reasons we wanted to bring more coaches onto Microcosm Coaching is to help uplift other people in the community who were already doing integral work, and knowing that we as coaches would only reach our potential and be able to serve our athletes if we had a strong cohort of colleagues who are engaged in that same project and who are going to push us and hold us accountable and who could like share their non-redundant skill sets with us. And I think that that's something that we've really, really baked into every into the DNA of how Microcosm operates, both on big and a small scale.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole, you nailed it. Again, rising tide lifts all boats. When you bring in people with a multidisciplinary background who, you know, have similar skills to your own, but also have skills that exist outside of your area of expertise, that entire, your entire knowledge base, you raise the floor on that. And yeah. To me, it's vital, because when you really have a community like that, you actually really begin to create an ecosystem that sustains itself. And that's, you know, what we're doing with Microcosm. We look to promote athletes from within to become coaches and to train them. We look to, other athletes who have other skills and bring them on board to help in other areas. It's been really cool to see how we can support each other in that way. And every individual has something to give. And if you're just kind of out there as a lone wolf, you don't have the opportunity to do something for the collective.
Yeah, TJ, I'm really curious, how do you define community for you, and where have, like, what has your journey in the running community looked like? Where have you maybe struggled, and where do you feel like you get the benefits of community that we're talking about here?
I mean, I get the benefits from Microcosm.
What specifically does that look like for you though?
It's the support, it's sharing in the, you know, the ups and downs of the journey and really normalizing all of that. I think, you know, particularly for me and what I look to see in our athletes in the community is, you know, coming forward and rising up to the challenges and, you know, projecting and externalizing the love and the compassion that we all need, to go after big dreams. I think, you know, my mentor and coach, Jeff Patterson, he says it really well. If your goal doesn't require help, it's not really a big goal. And I have to agree, you know, if we're in it alone and you think you can accomplish it alone, dream bigger, dream a lot bigger. And, you know, I've built Microcosm because, you know, like, I want to be able to dream as big as I can and know that I have people around me who are going to be there to lift me up when I fall short, who can support me. And I want to give those things back. You know, I'm creating this in my own image in many ways because those are my best attributes as a person. You know, my unconditional support, my unconditional commitment to help others grow. That's why in many ways we exist. And I know that when we're all doing that and working at those same things together, although our paths may not be the same, the experiences are very much similar. And so we all have something to give and to learn from each other. And you know, that's why Microcosm exists, period.
Yeah, I think that's so, so true. And I think for me, my perspective is that cultivating and curating this community isn't about cutting people out of my life or intentionally seeking out relationships with driven people or people that I feel that I might vibe with. But I know that when I'm living in a way that's consistent with my core values, which for me, that is like athletic excellence. That is prioritizing the training. That is getting the work done, even when it's not fun or sexy. When I'm living in that way that's consistent with those values, the only people who are going to be able to keep up and who are also doing that same stuff and engaged in that same project of building communities of excellence are going to be the people I connect with. And I wanted to share a quote from a recent article that I wrote in Trail Runner Magazine about my experience building friendships through the Western States Endurance Run, which is, when you're doing the thing that you've always wanted to do and you're stepping out of your comfort zone to do it and you've rearranged your life in ways big and small to make it happen, you look to your left and you look to your right, chances are that the folks who are standing shoulder to shoulder with you are pretty good candidates for friends. And I think that this quote, I'm quoting myself, like, let's all be that person this week, you know, really speaks to me and how I've made friendships throughout my adult life, because I think that I'll see a lot of athletes who feel like they have to modify their training to build community. They feel like they constantly have to bend over backwards and they have to water down their training and they have to compromise in order to meet people. And I'll say that I have found my most grounded and connected community by not compromising, by not modifying my training. And the people that are able to keep up with me when I am pursuing my goals to the best of my ability, those are the people that I find are like in stride with me as friends and life too. Those are the people who are going to answer my texts when I need them. Those are the people who are going to call me out when I need someone to hold me accountable and hold me in my integrity. And I think that if you feel that you constantly have to modify your training, if you find yourself consistently skipping workouts, skipping hill strides, missing days because your friends didn't want to run, I think that that is, again, it's not about cutting people out. I would just invite you to live for a moment without compromise. See what that looked like and felt like to you. Live in a way that is truly in accordance with your core values, and then see who's still there. You know, like, that is how I've made friends in the comedy community. That is how I've made friends in the running community. And that's how I've made friends in the journalism community as well, by like doing my very best and being kind of uncompromising in my values and persistence. And the people who, you know, who are still there, who like, who survive kind of the, like the, you know, who are able to keep up. Those are the people that I have found are the highest, that again, just like are there for me, who really show up. And I think that that's something that we just see a lot with athletes, is they feel compelled to always be making the changes and they never ask that of the people around them. And I'm curious, TJ, when do you think it's advantageous or disadvantageous to join a group run or run with a friend? And how do you think about balance and compromise in this context of like understanding that community is a performance enhancer, but like can have downsides if it's not harnessed appropriately?
That's a really good question. I think it's very individualized. You know, the way that works for me is I look at my goal and then I work backwards from there. You know, for example, if my goal is to create a self-sustaining ecosystem for Microcosm, full of athletes who are capable of one day becoming coaches or who want to spread the ripple and tell their friends about, you know, our holistic approach to coaching and our unconditional support, you know, and commitment to growth. And like, I'm going to look for those people, or they're going to find me. And when people approach me who don't have those values, I say no. And I've said no to many an athlete because they're a great guy, great gal, like great person. But you know, they're not committed, in the way that I'm looking, for commitment. They're not interested in growth the way that I'm interested in growth. And I work backwards from my goal and say, what is going to support the greater good? And the greater good is like, okay, if we have this ecosystem of Microcosm and we're all in it and we're a rising tide lifts all boats and we're really supporting each other, you know, the greater good there is we're changing the culture of running for the better. We're, you know, people are looking at running in a healthier way. They're having, you know, their goals are more sustainable. They're finding more joy in the process. I walk it back every time. It's like, what's my goal? And what are the actions that I, you know, need to put into place to connect with and achieve that goal? And if things don't align or they're not high enough on the priority list, I just say no. And, you know, that's, for me, that's how it's done. Like sometimes work, you know, running with a group, it's great. It's super fun. Love it. But it doesn't fit my schedule or the demands that I have on my time. You know, I have coaching responsibilities or whatnot. And so, you know, I'm willing to let those things go if I need, because that process supports where I'm trying to go. And so I'm never hung up on it. I never experience FOMO. I never experience those things, because it always comes from what do I want, not what do I need. I'm not trying to replace something. I'm trying to embody something. And it, you know, it's really easy for me because of that a lot of the times. And I think, you know, when athletes have trouble with this, it's an identity thing. Like, I'm not sure who I want to be or how to embrace this goal. And taking a step back and maybe starting with the goal, who do I need to be to achieve this? What habits do I need to have to achieve what I want? What priorities do I need to have to achieve what I want? What beliefs, all of these things that make up an identity. And then you see what supports it. And if a group run supports that, if it provides you with the motivation, it connects you with the people that you love to be with, if it gets you out on the trails you want to be out on, you know, then yeah, you've got to make time for that. And then, you know, a great coach will shift your training around and to help you do that, because they'll see the purpose that it has for you. I hope that made sense, Zoe, but that's kind of my position on it.
You know, the way I want athletes to think about this in their training is like, okay, you have two values. One value is of athletic excellence and reaching your goals. And your other value is community. So how can we access both of these values? Well, the only real way we can access that value of like following through on our athletic goals is through doing this specific training. Is there another way that we can also access that goal of connecting with our community? Does it have to always be through the group run? I think something that we see a lot of folks in Carbondale do, because we have a really amazing community group run every Thursday night. Shout out to Kyle Jones, Microcosm athlete who leads the group run. And it's really pace inclusive. But that's really challenging in Carbondale because we have like between 3 and 4 pro athletes who show up every week. And we have a lot of folks who are, you know, running all sorts of different paces. So a lot of the folks who want to run a little longer or run a little faster will do their run, and then they'll just catch, like they'll plan to intercept the group when they can. They'll do their work. Like Kylie will often do her workout and then use the group run as the cool down. Kyle and I use the group run as our super easy double. So there are ways where you can yes and this and get both, meet both goals out of it. And I think that it's always like trying to assess like, well, if I put all my eggs in this community basket, I might not have a mechanism to also fulfill my core value of athletic excellence and reaching my goals. So maybe there's another way you can get to community, because you're not going to get to athletic excellence without doing some serious and specific training. And that doesn't mean you have to like go it alone and be a lone wolf and like screw group runs. I'm doing it all by myself. It's not that at all. It's about understanding that there has to be compromise and negotiation, and understanding like where you can do that in a way that you can get both things. And getting both things usually doesn't mean skipping the hill stride, skipping the workout, shortening your runs. But, you know, and there are like, and again, when you are a consistent athlete, we have a lot more room for compromise here. Like if you want to do like a fun adventure run with your friends and you've been consistent for years and years and years, that's barely a blip on the radar. But if you're really down to the wire preparing for a big race and you haven't been consistent because you skied all winter and you've been injured, that puts a lot more pressure on every individual run and gives us a little less playtime to experiment with like doing these fun things. So I think that it's always just important to zoom out, see how like something as basic as consistency can actually fulfill your core value of community. and what other ways you can still like meet that need to connect with other people are, because I don't think it always has to be through the running. And if running feels like your only way of reaching out to other people and connecting with them, I think that should prompt some pretty serious interrogation.
Yeah. You know, like what other hobbies do you have? What other interests do you have? Are you, are you developing your identity outside of sport? And because running can go away very quickly. Yeah. As runners who know, who are really pushing their potential, injury can sometimes be one run away if we're not paying attention to the little things and the signs and the signals. And a lot of what you say, Zoe, there's undertones in just self-awareness and just learning about who you are, and then taking those insights and then acting from those places and with those things in mind, really responding, I think is super important. So, a plug for mindfulness, as I always will, that when you become a self-aware athlete, you have a lot of power. You have a lot of opportunity to then cultivate things and design your training in the way that, best serves your needs. And, I got to admit, like as a coach, I see a lot of athletes just feel like they have to lean on group runs and whatnot. And often I interpret a lot of that as a way to protect themselves from failure. I went to these group runs, I didn't do my workouts or strides, and it's the same thing every week. And then they get to their race and their race is not to the potential because they've sacrificed the work. And so, there is a way to compromise. We've seen it a lot. We've done it many times as athletes ourselves. And again, something that I do, because I often can't go to group runs, and for a long time I wasn't able to do doubles because I was really sick. And so I had to really minimize my stress in order to keep myself from having like these allergic reactions. And so I would just go just for the hang at the end. Or to go for pizza with folks after. And so there are other ways to engage in the community. And I love it when I see athletes who are like doing this, like who aren't able to race, but they're volunteering at races, who aren't able to race, but they're crewing for somebody. And so they're involved, they're getting out, they're experiencing those things that we all love about the running community. That love, that support, that unconditional support, the compassion, the empathy, all of these good things that I know so many of us were drawn into trail running and running in general because it really exists in a special way in this space. But we don't have to necessarily be participants in the race or the group run to get to those things.
Yeah, I really steer athletes away from ever doing a race just because a friend is doing it. Because again, I think there typically is another way to meet that need of connection, but there's not really another way to meet your need of achieving your athletic potential if you're just doing races because someone else is doing it. So I think, again, it's about assessing what are the multiple or singular pathways to being in, to pursuing this core value, to being in integrity with that value. From the other end of the spectrum, I'm someone who always used to be really, really nervous about showing up to group runs. I had a lot of insecurity about my athletic ability because I would show up to a group run, it'd be like a bunch of dudes, and they would immediately take their shirts off and sprint away at 6-minute pace. And that was not my vibe, continues to not be my vibe. But I had to do a lot of like self-reflection, and I was expressing this insecurity to a friend one day, and she was like, "Those are assholes. Like, why would you want to run with assholes anyway? Like, that is not, like, you should not feel bad that an asshole doesn't want to hang out with you. You don't want to hang out with assholes either." Not that those specific people are assholes, but I think it's just like contextualizing, like, I think we have a lot of athletes who are afraid that they're going to get dropped or they're going to get left behind. And any community that would leave you behind is not a community worth joining, right? So like in the same way that you want to find people who are able to keep up with you, you also, and it's that like tension of like, you also got to find people who are down to go your pace. Like when I'm texting and coordinating with people and we want to link up an effort, I'm always going to let them know, like, hey, I want to do about this much vert, maybe about this much time or these many miles. Here's kind of the effort I'm shooting for. Like, oh, I might need to drop a tempo in there, or like, I'm looking to keep it easy. And for easy for me probably means somewhere in this ballpark of paces, because something that I am not down to do at this point in my athletic career is get strung along by people who are unwilling to slow down and run at my easy effort when that's what my training needs. I am, you know, I'm just a lot more comfortable and confident in advocating for myself and advocating for the belief in my plan. Cause like the reason I pay for a coach isn't so, you know, I can get like, it's to actually do the training that my coach gives me. Right. Because I truly believe in it and I have seen how it helps me as an athlete, and just like kind of watering it down by doing someone else's training and going someone else's effort when that's not a fit for me isn't any good. I'm always happy to slow down though, right? Like that's something that I, unless I have like, again, like unless I really need to do something intentional as I'm building for a race, like aerobic adventures in the Alpine or like fun adventure runs with gal pals, amazing, love that. Always down to like not need to like race every effort or like do everything like alone in the hard way. I think it can be really useful to mix it up. Like if you're someone who tends to run alone, find a buddy. If you're someone who struggles to run alone, maybe investigate why and get curious about that and like find what kind of adventures really speak to and animate you personally.
Awesome. All right, let's get into some hot or not questions to close this thing out.
Love it.
All right.
First one I picked almost especially for you, TJ. Hot or not, sunscreen.
So hot.
Yeah, for people who don't know what TJ looks like, he looks like the person who's propping up the sunscreen industry. He is a gorgeous little pale ginger man. And we go through a lot of sunscreen in this household. And when I say we, I mean TJ, because I am terrible about putting sunscreen on. And I always regret it. So I want to say I aspire for sunscreen to be hot, but realistically, with my current an accurate assessment of my current habits, would say that sunscreen is not.
All right, zero drop shoes, hot or not?
Not. I am not a fan. Unless you know that it really, really works for your biomechanics. We as coaches have seen a lot of athletes get lower leg injuries, calf strains, Achilles issues, plantar issues from zero drop shoes because they put a lot of extra strain on the lower leg. There's no evidence suggesting that it's like actually better. It doesn't like help fix your stride. Most experts would actually say it's not a good goal to want to quote unquote fix your stride. A lot of the stuff that you see around zero drop shoes is kind of based on this like bunk science about like getting back to our like caveman running patterns. And a lot of it's just like really not based in research. So don't fall prey to that. Rock a high drop shoe if that's what works for you. Hot right. or not, TJ?
Not hot.
Yeah.
Ice cold.
Ice cold. KT tape. Hot or not?
I've never used it. I think I'm a not hot guy on this one.
Oh my god. For me, so hot. I tape the hell out of myself before races. Like partially I've had some like recurrent Achilles stuff that I find that when I tape my Achilles can just like nip that in the bud right away. I've also found that for high chafe areas around my vest, like I get really bad chafing on my collarbone, sometimes on the back of my neck, sometimes on the side of my rib cage. I have a human squishy body and sometimes stuff just changes and it rubs, and being able to just like tape it, I have found really, really minimizes discomfort later stages in races. So I'm going to be 10 out of 10 hot on KT tape, rock tape, whatever tape you're using. Tape awesome. Everything.
Just tape it all.
Tape it all.
Okay. Ice vests, hot or not?
I'm going to say reasonably hot. This was something that, so I bought one, which is pretty expensive for Western States last year, and only ended up using it for like 90 seconds. I felt that I was heat acclimated enough that I personally didn't really need it. I will say I saw a lot of other athletes use it, like Tyler Green, Leah Yingling used an ice vest to like straight up cross the river at Recce Chucky. So I think that there are ways that using an ice vest at key aid stations in hot races can be a really, really effective way to bring down athlete core temperature. If you're down to spend a couple $100, this could be something worth using if you're doing Javelina, Western States, or another really, really warm race where you know you'll be able to spend a little bit of time in an aid station cooling down. This is not something I can understand how someone would be able to run with it for more than a minute or so. They're very, very heavy and bulky.
They weren't designed for that. They were designed for Olympic athletes to wear to the start line of hot races to keep their core temps as cool as possible. And they found that it actually delayed the onset of the rising core temperature, so it allowed them to perform better. So there actually is a scientific use case for these vests. I think they can be really important, especially for long races that are really hot, where you're not as concerned with taking some time in an aid station, throwing one on, bringing that core temp down so you can really eat and bring some blood back to the digestive system. I think, you know, if used strategically, can be extremely beneficial. So
yeah,
hot.
So yeah, hot ice vests within narrow evidence-based applications, hot.
Hey, you know, if it's good enough for the US Olympic team, good enough for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Last but not least, race reports, hot or not.
I am personally not a fan. I feel like I get emailed like 50 of these a week at Trail Runner. Everyone, and I think that like, I understand because it comes from a deep-seated human need to communicate and connect our experiences with other people. I can't tell you how many times I've had people send me an email that's like, my first ultra, it was hard, but then I persevered and I overcame. And that's like a really awesome experience. But I also think that something about the writing process should be triangulated with other people's experience. And you should think about like your, like what your audience is going to get from something. Like, I think that like, not that there needs to be like a takeaway in terms of like helping other people self-optimize, but I do think you should consider what parts of your story are interesting or applicable or will be resonant with other people. And I think that in the ultra running community, we all just tend to think that because we are awesome and we're doing awesome things like running ultras, which is, or running trail races at all, marathons, which is objectively awesome. Those things don't always make very compelling narratives, particularly from brains that are tired from having run 25 to 100 miles. I know that like, this is like my worst hot take. Like, this is something that I know most people totally disagree with. I'm not a fan because I feel like they're so freaking predictable. And I think that if you're going to take the time to put pen to paper, like make it weird, make it really different. Like I think that one of the things that I like about ultras, they do kind of fit like a narrative pattern. They are predictable, but something that makes a good, well-executed race makes a very poor and poorly executed story. So as a professional writer and runner, I'm not all in on the race report.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
What about you, TJ?
You know, it's, I think, a little different as a coach. Where these things just get ice cold for me is when it's a journal entry that belongs in someone's journal, you know, before bed, in the morning. I get a lot of information thrown at me as a coach, and not all of it is always concise or articulate. And so then the job becomes, okay, how do I extrapolate the important things from this when this is stream of consciousness? And I don't find that helpful for me, or, you know, for me to help serve somebody, for me to help an athlete get takeaways from it. So what I always ask is, you know, I do appreciate a race report, but I more appreciate something that's thoughtful and concise. And it's not to say that, you know, to trivialize the race experience. And for a lot of athletes who are doing something that's new, you know, it's going to have a lot of new feelings. But, you know, let's journal in a journal and then email or use the training log for something that's clear and concise. You know, what's something that went well? What's something that you were working on before the race that you feel like, you know, you executed well on? What's something that didn't go well? You know, give me some clear and concise takeaways, or, you know, get with me and then I can ask you some specific questions. So again, you know, and this kind of just goes to training logs and all of that. And they're not journals. They are, you know, actual vehicles or systems or tools for really precise way of looking at training. So
it's a two-way communication mechanism, right? And I think that like that is my overall issue with race reports, is I feel like oftentimes they fail to consider their audience, and they fail to consider the attention span and interest of their audience. And for writing to be good and worth reading, you should consider your audience. Otherwise, yeah, you're just screaming at a brick wall, you know?
Totally. I think, you know, 6 to 8 sentences on a race, you can totally, you know, convey tons of emotion, excitement, disappointment, and also takeaways, you know. It's just, again, it's important to be concise and articulate, I think, as much as you can.
When my thesis advisor was helping advise my undergraduate honors thesis, the challenge and advice he gave me was, if you can't write a haiku about your like 100-page paper, then you don't actually understand what you're trying to say. So figure out what your haiku is in every sentence in this 100-page paper. Make sure it works in service of that core haiku, but figure out your haiku first. Know what you're actually trying to say, and say it as clearly and simply and powerfully as you can.
Love it. Well, awesome. Thanks, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. As usual, if you have any feedback, a question for a future call, you're looking for support in your running journey, visit us on the web, microcosm-coaching.com, or contact us at microcosmcoaching@gmail.com. And if you've got a minute, rate and review us over on iTunes. Helps us spread the word and build
community.
Send to
a friend. Send to your mom.
Yeah, send to a friend.
Send to your dog.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, TJ.